This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us, only sky.
Born-again skeptics, and all of you who were born right the first time, I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist of the airwaves.
We're broadcasting.
And Free Thought Radio is produced by the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest group of non-believers, atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate, and we'll talk about some of that today, and also working to educate the public about the views of us who do not believe. On previous shows, I've asked listeners to send in jokes, and they're coming in. Thank you very much. And here's one that came in a few days ago. The ship was sinking fast, and the captain was very worried, and the captain yelled out to the people in the ship, "Does anybody here know how to pray?" And this one man raised his hand, and he said, "I do." And the captain said, "Great, because we are one life jacket short."
We'll be talking later in the show with a student free thought activist from South Carolina, Andrew Cedardall, who is president of something called the Pastafarians.
Pastafarians. We'll hear a little more about that. It's a tongue-in-cheek group that, quote-unquote, worships the great giant flying spaghetti monster.
And we'll talk about what it's like to be an atheist activist student in the buckle of the Bible Belt.
And we'll also talk with Matt Rothschild, editor of the Progressive magazine, about their upcoming festivities in early May, marking the 100th anniversary of the Progressive magazine and the lineup of celebrity speakers for the Progressive Conference in May, with a lot of big-name people, including Robert Redford.
And now for some news. Did you know that Pat Boone considers the Freedom From Religion Foundation to be a, quote, sordid, maniacal group?
Pat Boone, the Christian actor and singer, wrote a column this week posted on the notoriously religious right World Net Daily. Boone's column was titled, "I, Pat Boone, American, Refuse to be Quarantined." That's the title of his piece. He claims Christians are being treated like lepers due to enforcement of separation between church and state. Pat Boone goes on to single out our group, the Freedom From Religion Foundation, because of our litigation against the National Day of Prayer, which names as one defendant Shirley Dobson, who's the chair of the National Day of Prayer Task Force, and she's the wife of Focus on the Family founder James Dobson. Pat Boone criticizes our litigation as showing, quote, gall, and as, quote, a blatant un-American effort to extort and intimidate Christians into abandoning our very heritage.
Now, Dan, you have to fess up, because in your, I will call it, misbegotten youth as a Christian evangelist yourself and a Christian musician yourself, you once accompanied Pat Boone on the piano.
I met Pat Boone, that's right. Well, I was in my early 20s. This was in the early 1970s. And I flew to Phoenix, where Pat Boone was part of a huge, there must have been 10 or 12,000 people in this huge auditorium, and he needed an accompanist. And so we met backstage, and he was wearing those white shoes, and we ran through some keys and some songs, and then I went out to the big grand piano, and I played.
And then he sang off key, right?
Well, he sang okay. I was just accompanying basic Christian gospel songs for Pat Boone at a Christian rally.
To be an American, part of a great democracy, where our equal rights are for everyone, thanks to justice and liberty.
Okay, that's enough, Dan. That's Pat Boone singing "I'm Proud to Be an American," singing about justice and liberty as an American. But justice and liberty for everyone is not possible, Pat Boone, when the government takes a position on religion and tells you that you have to pray or who you have to pray to.
So we're defending our lawsuit against the National Day of Prayer, and this we've talked about on the show before is a law that was only passed in 1952, and it's based on a lie, the religious right myth that our founders prayed at the Constitutional Convention adopting our godless constitution. They did not pray at that convention, but that's
not formally.
Not at all.
Well, a couple of them might have privately prayed, but there were no official prayers, right?
Exactly. And Benjamin Franklin asked for them. There were three or four who agreed, and they adjourned for the day, and people were embarrassed.
Without
they never
prayer.
Prayed at the Constitutional Convention formally. And this is in part of the congressional record as the reason for adopting the National Day of Prayer. And then when Ronald Reagan was president in 1988, Congress took what was a floating holiday, and they turned it into the first Thursday of every May as the National Day of Prayer.
The Day of Thor. Thursday is the Day of Thor.
And since that time, it's gotten much worse because Focus on the Family has been targeting the president and all of the governors, and they feed them scripture verses, and they feed them a theme, and they have these activities with the government at local and state levels. And if you have such activities happening in your own location that you're offended by, we would like to know about them, and you can contact us at ffrf.org.
To challenge the National Day of Prayer. Last weekend, of course, was Not So Good Friday and Not So Good Easter. And on last week's program, we talked about the pagan and natural origins of Easter, but we didn't talk about the state church issues that we face over Good Friday every year.
And here in Wisconsin, we're based in Madison, Wisconsin, we were one of the few states in the country to have a law proclaiming Good Friday as a state holiday. But the difference in Wisconsin was that the law passed in the 1940s actually directed every Wisconsin citizen to pray. The law said that you shall worship between certain hours, and they turned that into all afternoon on Fridays in the 1950s.
So they could close all the government offices.
And everything was closed, everything. And we got complaints about it for years, and we took a federal lawsuit and won in 1996, which was terrific. But we are finding out that there are a lot of schools and in counties and government facilities that still are behaving as if it's the national day, or that it's a national holiday.
Here's some news coverage of just one complaint the Freedom From Religion Foundation is fielding over the closing of public schools to commemorate Good Friday. This is reporter Linda Eggert on the CBS station in Madison, Wisconsin.
Thanks for joining us tonight. A national group that sues over separation of church and state matters may be suing MATC for canceling classes on Good Friday. News 3's Linda Eggert reports the group says it is just one of 15 technical state colleges where the teachers have been given this Christian holiday off, Linda.
Terry, at issue here is whether a taxpayer-funded college like MATC can do that and cancel classes when a judge in 1996 specifically forbid state recognition of Good Friday as a holiday. It's a case that could end up in court, championed in part by one older MATC student.
When it was finished, my wife liked it so much, we decided to frame them both.
Retired teachers union lobbyist and technical college student Ken Olin loves art, but he could only talk about it today rather than create it because his weekly oil painting class at MATC was canceled, just like every other class. Exactly why is the key question.
It would be a very good Friday for us if the law were being followed.
While Christians all over the state recognized Good Friday by going to church, officials with the Freedom From Religion Foundation allege MATC and almost every other technical state college did the same by canceling classes. The group says they are violating a federal judge's ruling 13 years ago that struck down as unconstitutional a state law recognizing Good Friday as a holiday. Officials at MATC disagree.
Our understanding of what the judge declared was that Good Friday cannot be a legal holiday in the state of Wisconsin. And we are not declaring it a legal holiday here either.
MATC officials say what they are doing is following the teachers' negotiated contract. It includes so-called non-instructional days where teachers don't teach, usually for specific reasons like exam grading or professional development. April 10th, the Friday before Easter, is also a non-instructional day with no specific reason attached. Some, including Olin, believe the reason is clear and unconstitutional.
It sounds to me like it's quacking like a duck, and I think it's a duck.
The Constitution is more important than a union contract, and they have it backwards.
The Upshot Gaylor claims is an MATC message that students should honor a Christian holiday by not going to class, and that she says illegally favors one religion over another and religion in general. However, the college remains adamant that it is in compliance with the law. Terry, the foundation says it'll make a decision next week whether to pursue this in federal court.
All right, we'll see what happens. Thanks, Linda, for the report tonight.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. And we'll be right back after a short break to talk with a South Carolina student activist and with Matt Rothschild. He's an atheist, of course, but he's also a progressive activist and editor of the Progressive magazine, celebrating its 100th anniversary this May.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio.
Hi, my name is Amanda from Des Moines, Iowa. I get all my books from FFRF, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio.
And now it's time for Free Thinkers Almanac, where we celebrate contributions of famous free thinkers who were born this month in history.
I should say that pretty little ditty, that's Dan playing the piano, but that's the Free Thought anthem, the German anthem, Die Gedanken sind frei.
My thoughts freely flower. There were so many important freethinkers born in April.
Non-religious authors born in April include Christopher Hitchens, author of God is Not Great, Emile Zola, Algernon Swinburne, lyricist Yip Harburg, Anatole France, Isaac Dinesen, and artists Joseph Turner and Eugène Delacroix.
Freethinking giants born this month include Thomas Jefferson, Clarence Darrow, William Shakespeare, and the philosophers Thomas Hobbes and David Hume, the historian Edward Gibbon, and the early mother of the woman's movement, Mary Wollstonecraft. Scientists born in April include James D. Watson, co-discoverer of the DNA double helix.
Freethinking actors and performers born in the month of April include Marlon Brando, Paul Robeson, Tom Lehrer, who wrote that perennial free thought favorite song, Vatican Rag, and we'll listen to him and sing it in a few minutes, Rod Steiger, Bruce Sterling, Charlie Chaplin, and Uma Thurman.
And let's single out the actor Jack Nicholson. He was born on April 22nd, 1937. He acted in Five Easy Pieces, which was his breakthrough role. Many notable movies include Easy Rider, Carnal Knowledge, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, for which he won a Best Actor
Oscar.
Terms of Endearment, for which he won a Best Supporting Actor Oscar, Pretty's Honor, Batman, A Few Good Men, and As Good As It Gets, which won him a second Best Actor Oscar. Jack Nicholson told Vanity Fair in 1992, "I don't believe in God now." In the movie The Witches of Eastwick, Jack Nicholson played the devil.
What's the matter? You don't think God makes mistakes? Of course he does. We all make mistakes. Of course, we make mistakes, they call it evil. When God makes mistakes, they call it nature.
When God makes a mistake, he calls it nature. That was Jack Nicholson.
God gets the credit, but never the blame.
God gets the credit, never the blame. Well, that was this week's Freethinkers Almanac. We mentioned Tom Lehrer, whose birthday is in April, and we found a clip, I think we played this a couple years ago, of him on live TV in the 1960s performing before a live audience his song, The Vatican Rag.
First you get down on your knees, fiddle with your rosaries, bow your head with great respect, and genuflect, genuflect, genuflect. Make do whatever steps you want if you have cleared them with the pontiff. Everybody say his own Kyrie eleison, doing the Vatican Rag. Get in line in that processional, step into that small confessional. There the guy who's got religion will tell you if your sin's original. If it is, try playing it safer. Drink the wine and chew the wafer. 2, 4, 6, 8. Time to transubstantiate. So get down upon your knees, fiddle with your rosaries, bow your head with great respect, and genuflect, genuflect, genuflect. Make a cross on your abdomen when in Rome, do like a Roman. Ave Maria, gee, it's good to see ya. Getting ecstatic and sort of dramatic and doing the Vatican Rag.
If you want to learn more about the people that we feature in these Freethinker almanacs occasionally, we have a link at our website, Free Thought of the Day, and we have for every day of the year, there's at least one famous freethinker born, or we have a quote, and you'd be amazed at the contributions made by the people who are non-religious. And now I think we have a minute, so I'd like to, we didn't get a chance to talk about something that happens very timely. USA Today this week reported that there is new information, new books, and research on the Columbine school shooting tragedy that occurred 10 years ago this week. And there was a story, you remember that story, that there were two student killers who shot a female student in the head. First they asked her if she believed in God, and when she said yes, they shot her. And you remember that.
And there's a book written about that. Her parents wrote a book about
it. It never happened, according to the FBI. And we are indebted to our producer for shooting us that story.
No problem. I just found it interesting that a story out there that's such common knowledge, you know, USA Today, obviously a major publication, revealing the fact that that is sort of a
myth.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. Free Thought Radio will be back after this break. We're going to talk with a student free thought activist from South Carolina who will be featured soon in an article in the New York Times, and with our favorite progressive editor, Matt Rothschild.
Find out more about Free Thought Radio and the Freedom From Religion Foundation at FFRF.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. Protect the First Amendment. It protects you.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio.
And we're happy to have on the phone this week our first guest from South Carolina. Andrew Cederdahl is the president of a group called the Pastafarians. It's a student group at the University of South Carolina in Columbia, South Carolina. They have a good active free thought group there. I met with them when I spoke there recently. Andrew was one of the main organizers of the February 12th debate, and February 12th was Charles Darwin's 200th birthday, in which I got to participate in. Andrew wants to work in activism or in constitutional law or some way to make the world better, he says. He is a second-year student majoring in political science. And when I was there in South Carolina, I learned that he largely influenced his own parents who live in Tennessee to come out as non-believers.
So welcome to Free Thought Radio, Andrew.
Thank you very much.
So first tell us, why is a group of atheists and agnostics worshiping the great spaghetti monster of the Pastafarians?
As many of the listeners may know, Pastafarianism is a big satire, obviously. Yeah, I know, it's shocking. But I think it just points to the absurd nature of faith, and it makes people really look at faith in that funny way when we say, look, we have our own gospel of the flying spaghetti monster, and we have the same basis that you do for your belief, really. So that's kind of the main idea behind it.
I saw you did an interview on TV the night of the debate in which you said, it's a silly name for a serious group.
Right.
And you guys are championing reason and science and free thought over superstition and religion.
That's correct.
Are there a lot of religious groups on campus?
Oh yeah, there are a lot. We're the only secular group, but there are, I would say, at least a dozen or two dozen religious groups.
So what do the Pastafarians do?
We like to, our main goals are advocate for the separation between church and state, have a dialogue between religious groups, make sure that the secular side is at the table too, in these dialogues, make sure that secular people aren't demonized here on campus, bettering our image here, just a lot of goals we have.
So why did you do this? You students are really poor and you're really busy, and no one, our group didn't come to you. No group came to you and said, hey, start a group. Why do you feel motivated to do something like this?
Right. Well, I come from South Carolina. I was born in North Augusta, South Carolina, raised there all my life. Religion utterly permeates our society down here. And I independently came to atheism myself before I even was aware that there's a whole movement out there. And I was turned on to, you know, Richard Dawkins, God Delusion, Richard Dawkins and stuff from some friends. And that was before college. And when I came to college, I wanted to interact with like-minded people. I wanted to have a forum for these ideas, but there was no group in existence. So as a freshman, I started the Pastafarians with my friend Matt Suam, who was like one of the first atheists I met on campus, to make sure that we had a place at the table too, even in the Bible Belt.
Now, you, our listeners need to keep their eyes peeled, if that's not a contradiction in terms, because Laurie Goodstein from the New York Times flew down to interview you, and that article is supposed to run any day now, right?
Hopefully, yes.
And so she must have thought this is pretty special, this student activist in the buckle of the Bible Belt, and so what did you guys talk about?
She flew down for a group meeting, and at the meeting we talked about the implications of secularism and family life. Obviously, a lot of people are very demonized in the South, as I said, and it causes a lot of familial conflict with very religious families. And I find it very helpful for students to be able to have a forum to get these feelings out and talk about the implications.
And so the movement of secularism, not just on college campuses, but she's also presumably writing about the growth of secularism in America, which is right now the fastest growing, if it were a religion, the fastest growing religious identification in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how are the Pastafarians, how are you individually finding yourself treated in this very religious atmosphere?
Well, I try to be active outside of the movement too, and to show that secular people care about other things too. I'm a senator in student government. I am an executive member in the Gamecock Leadership Society. I do other things, and I feel that I've been treated very well. I think I've won a lot of respect for what I've done. I always treat others with respect, and I think I get that in return because of that. Our meetings are always open to people of faith if they want to come, because I believe that secularism stands on its own merits, and I'm not here to tell people what to think. So people are always welcome to come. We're a very open group, and I think that has definitely helped with this whole process.
How many members or how many typical students show up at events?
At events, it could range anywhere from 50 to upwards of 500. Like as Dan mentioned in the Darwin Day debate, we had to actually turn people away because we had too many people come, and the venue was too small. But at meetings, we'll get anywhere from 15 to 25 people regularly.
And what are some of your upcoming events?
This year is winding down. We recently had an interfaith service project, and we had an intercollegiate debate that actually just happened this week with Columbia International University, a Christian university. We had some student-led, student-moderated debates between those people. But this year is winding down. I think we'll have maybe another pasta party or something to thank all our members. And next year we have to organize some other bigger events and activities.
I think it's amazing what you guys are doing there.
Thank you.
So you do eat a lot of pasta?
Oh, we do. We had a pasta party for the troops this semester where we raised money and supplies for Operation Foxhole Atheists. Thing that Blair Scott does with American Atheists. Very, very cool guy. And we sent a big box of supplies for our atheist soldiers who, of course, that old axiom that there are no atheists in foxholes, trying to prove that wrong.
And we have a monument to atheists in foxholes at Lake Hypatia, Alabama.
Right.
So there are many atheists in foxholes.
It was so nice that the morning of the debate when I flew in, and your parents were in the same hotel, and I said, oh, you're Andrew's parents, and your sister was there. They came down from Tennessee, and I said, so you people are free thinkers? And they said, we are now. Andrew is so smart, and, you know, his ideas make so much sense. And they were, like, cheering on my side of the debate that night. That was so nice to see.
Does your local group, does your school group have a website, Andrew?
We don't have a website. We have a Facebook group, actually. It's USC Pastafarians, if people want to check that out. That's the main thing we use.
Well, thank you very much for joining Free Thought Radio today, and we're going to be back in a second to talk with Matt Rothschild about the upcoming 100th anniversary gala of the Progressive magazine, including freethinking celebrities as well as Robert Redford.
Hi, this is August Berkshire, and I'm the president of Minnesota Atheists, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker.
And we've invited Matthew Rothschild for a cameo this week on Free Thought Radio. Matthew, of course, is the editor of The Progressive Magazine, which is one of the leading voices for peace and social justice in this country. Matt Rothschild has appeared on Nightline, on C-SPAN, The O'Reilly Factor, and NPR, and his newspaper commentaries have run in the Chicago Tribune, the LA Times, Miami Herald, and a host of other newspapers. Welcome back to Free Thought Radio, Matt.
Hey, Dan and Annie Laurie, it's a real pleasure.
So I have to wish you happy 100th anniversary.
Thank you. We're 100 years old and we still have our teeth.
I just saw the issue. You have a really fat magazine usually, but this month it's like twice as fat.
Well, we did something we've never done before, which was came out with a commemorative issue that walks the reader through every year of the Progressive's existence from 1909 to the present. And what we did was we went through the arduous process of reading every single issue of the Progressive that has ever been published and tried to pluck out the best things we could find, unearth the gems, polish the gems, cut them down to size, and then reproduce them in the magazine. So each page of the magazine is 1 year. And this gives people a real sense of the chronology of the Progressive movement and the essence of the Progressive movement from the beginnings in the early parts of the 20th century right up to today.
It's like looking at the whole 20th century through that one lens, the Progressive lens. And I went back to my birth year was one of the first things. But you go, there's, you know, the Titanic and the World War and the women's right to vote and, you know, the Depression and, you know, all of that stuff that this country went through the eyes of progressive people.
Yeah, for anyone interested in U.S. history, even if you don't identify as a progressive, this special issue of the Progressive magazine, I think, would be a treasure for you because it puts things into perspective. All the events, you know, we have an article on, you know, have you seen the passenger pigeon, for instance, in 1911, which is kind of quaint and depressing if you're a bird watcher like I am. But, you mentioned the Great Depression, Dan. I mean, the material in the 1930s that we unearthed here at the Progressive, you know, could have been published today. I mean, there are discussions there about, you know, bailing out the banks, for instance,
yes,
and whether we should nationalize them or why should we just bail them out and give them back to the bankers who already ruined them.
Brother, can you spare a billion?
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing the kind of material that is in there. There's an article by Senator Claude Pepper in 1939 about people wanting Roosevelt to fail. I mean, this sounds like Rush Limbaugh. They want Roosevelt to fail because they want to return government to the special interests who've always owned it. And that's what Rush wants, too. So the echoes are just all over the place here.
And it's beautiful. It's beautifully laid out. I mean, these are little nuggets, and then there's two or three or four cartoons or graphics on every page.
Yeah, you can thank our art director, Nick Jellin, for that. But when we were going through, we would Xerox, you know, 10 pieces of art from each a year and send them to Nick, and he would pick out what he thought was the best one or two cartoons. So if you're interested in the history of cartooning and illustration in the magazine or newspaper world, this is also a real interesting look.
Yeah, this is a keeper. Now, how can people, if they're not already subscribers, which they should be, how can they get hold of this commemorative issue?
Well, the easiest way is to go to progressive.org. That's not progressive.com, which gets you auto insurance, but progressive.org. Or you can call our 1-800 number, which I'll try to lay my hands on here. Or you could also, if you're in Madison, Wisconsin, or ever in Madison, you could just come visit us at our office at 409 East Main Street. But the 1-800 number is 1-800, of course, 827-0555.
Or I want to put in a plug for the Regent Street Market, which is your neighborhood market and mine. You can get the Progressive there.
Yes.
And many other places.
Yeah, I often have a stack there just to see how... It's my little lobster trap. You know, see how many people are interested in what particular issue of the magazine we have on display there. We also have a book, The Best of the Progressive Magazine, that just came out from University of Wisconsin Press, which is... which uses some of the material you have in the special issue of the magazine, but is a much expanded version and letting the essayists just sprawl out, because in the magazine itself, we cut each article down to about a paragraph. But here you have long essays and also original poetry and some fascinating material that didn't make it into the special issue itself. So that's also available and can be found on our website, again, at progressive.org.
Is Zona Gale make it into either the book or the magazine?
You know, she didn't, and I read her over and over again. Was that an oversight on our part?
Well, I don't know, because she was a good friend of Robert La Follette.
I know. She wrote a lot for us. She was a novelist in the early part of the 20th century and wrote
from Wisconsin.
Yeah, in Wisconsin, and she wrote a lot.
I just have to put in a plug for one of my favorite little nuggets that's in this commemorative issue, and it's by Carl Sandburg. He wrote it February 10th, 1912. Do you remember what I'm talking about,
Matt?
I just
love this one, and I didn't know this was in there, and when I found it, I was just ecstatic. It's entitled My Baby Girl, and I have a daughter, too, so it hit me hard also. But this was Carl Sandburg writing about having his first child, a girl, and within 24 hours of having the baby, being told, of course, he didn't have the baby, his wife did, but being told by all his friends at all, isn't that too bad? Isn't it too bad you didn't have a boy? And he said, no, it isn't too bad. And he looked forward and understood that there would be a time very soon when women would have the right to vote and women would be in the House and the Senate, and that it's okay, it's great to have a baby girl, even if the year is 1912.
Well, that piece, fortunately, is a little dated, but but very telling. Now, tell us all about the gala coming up.
Well, we have a huge celebration of the Progressive Magazine's 100th year, but really it's a celebration of the progressive movement then and now. And so on April 30th in Madison, Wisconsin, we're having a special concert with Ani DiFranco, the Indigo Girls, and Dar Williams at the Orpheum Theater. And then on May 1st and 2nd at the Monona Terrace Conference Center in downtown Madison, we're having a huge conference with great speakers, including Naomi Klein and Cindy Sheehan and Barbara Ehrenreich and Howard Zinn and Katrina VandenHeuvel and Representative Tammy Baldwin and other members of Congress, and Robert Redford. He's our real big ticket.
Well, and so, and of course, there's freethinkers, non-religious among the speakers. Ani DiFranco, you've interviewed her. And I
have.
Remember...
You know, I've interviewed her three times. I was introduced to her, not literally, but metaphorically, by our old publisher, Joy Wallen, who loved her music. And, you know, I'm pretty ignorant when it comes to a lot of music. But I loved Ani DiFranco's music, and I loved her attitude, and I loved her politics. So I kind of followed her through from, I think, the first time I interviewed her. She had just come out with the album Not a Pretty Girl. And
she came out as an atheist, I remember, you interviewed her.
Yeah, she's just a fascinating person who's done it herself, who founded her own record company, Righteous Babe Records, and has been totally independent of the corporate music biz.
Now, what are there a series of speakers or panels, or how does the conference go?
The conference is designed this way. On Friday, it's mostly panel day. We're having panels on human rights and the environment, on women's rights, on fighting corporate power, taking on the empire, which the United States is and has been for the past 100 years. And then on Friday night, there's going to be, for just $10 only, anyone can come see Jesse Jackson and Amy Goodman giving talks, and that's going to be fun. And then on Saturday, we're just going to have one great speaker after another, really.
So who are some of the other speakers?
Well, there's going to be a panel on Saturday, How to Fight the Corporate Media, with Robert McChesney, who lives here in Madison and is now the dean of media critics in this country. Also, David Barsamian is going to be on that panel. Dennis Kucinich is going to be giving a talk. Dolores Huerta, the great United Farm Workers co-founder, is going to be speaking, as is Joan Claybrook, who has headed Public Citizen for about 30 years, and Katha Pollitt from The Nation will be there, poet Martina Spada. There's just going to be terrific
people. We'll have
people.
A table there?
You're going to have
and
a table
banner
there.
At the Freedom from Religion Foundation?
And I just asked you, and you said yes, that you'd participate in that panel on championing women's rights.
Yeah,
I'm excited about that.
Very honored. Thank
and
you.
In the current issue, the commemorative issue is a full-page ad by the Freedom from Religion Foundation, which points out that fighting Bob La Follette owed a great deal to the early Freethought movement.
Yeah, you know, La Follette was not a big religious person. He didn't, you know, throw around religious ideas and beliefs, and he was very open in the magazine to letting free thinkers say their bit, and that's always been true. In fact, that allowing of dissent within the pages of the Progressive, even in World War II, to let pacifists into the Progressive was one of its hallmarks, this courageous attitude by the editors.
Thank you so much, and people can find out more about the conference, more about the magazine, where?
Everything at progressive.org, Annie Laurie.
Well, thank you so much, and congratulations.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
Thank you, Matt. Our announcer is Buzz Kemper. And go to ffrf.org/radio to hear archives and sign up for a podcast of all of our shows.
You can ask for more information at ffrf.org, phone 1-800-335-4021 for a sample issue of our newspaper. And we want to thank our guests today, Andrew Cederdahl and Matt Rothschild, for joining us and inviting you to come back next week for more Rational Radio.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.